Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right. Should we? I don't even know what episode we are.
It's an episode. I don't know. We don't have to like, we're just coming back. Everybody's confused as to what episode we're on. So.
Except it tells them when they're listening to it.
Well, yeah, but you only have to worry about that when you're making the boat.
1:35, so it's you who starts it.
Oh, shit. Can we just say that was the start? It's 1:35. Welcome back, bitches. Sorry for the longer than planned hiatus.
It's probably going to happen again.
Yeah, it's probably going to happen again. Sorry.
We have a lot going on in our lives right now.
Yeah, it was like between Christina being in and out of the hospital slash her family also having medical issues. And then
Dad went in and out of the hospital.
Yeah. And then I have the wedding planning stuff and we're right on that like edge of less than a month. So I'm going to be constantly doing stuff. And then September is just going to be, we're going to have a break in September. The end. We're going to have to because Christina's going to be traveling. I'm going to be traveling.
Amanda's going to lose it.
Listen here, you bitch.
I can hear it.
She's right on the brink of sanity.
She's very close to taking a grippy sock vacation. And
I told Chris, I'm like, the closer we get, the more I'm like, can we just not like just, you know, just go somewhere and do it and not do the whole party, but at the same time, like that's what I'm looking forward to, and like, you know. That's what we've put all of our time and effort and money into. So no. So probably not. But after the wedding, all of my extra money is going to decor for the fall and the Halloween. This is Halloween. And I get to come see you for Halloween in person, as long as you're not ill. Slash
no.
Nothing else surprises anybody, anything? It's fine. What's up? How you doing? Oh, Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
I went heavy metal there for a minute. It's fine.
Fine. Nope, that was too much.
Did you watch the Snapchats I sent you last night?
Yes. of the Wish Zach Bagans on what was the show?
It's called It Feels Evil.
And what kind of a fucking name is that? It Feels Evil.
Well, and one of the it's on Discovery Plus. I was like, I want a show I can watch that's like not gonna keep me up, but is also like a new show because I'm bored with my go-to shows.
Yep.
So I like turned it on and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I swear to God, I watched like three episodes just laughing. I'm like, all right, I gotta go to bed now. Cause it's literally they even like taunt the best way to bring out a demon entity is to taunt it. So then you like the video I sent you of, I bet Jesus Christ is gonna kick your ass.
I was like, what? You can't invoke the name of Jesus Christ and then say he's gonna kick someone's ass. That's not how it works.
And then so there's this one part. Watch it. It's great. It's great. It's a great show. There's a one.
So good. Well produced.
It's literally, what is it? Ghost Adventures?
Yeah.
From Wish. But yeah. Anyway, there's a girl in it and she does like all the Wiccan stuff. So they're like, there's one part where she's casting a protection spell.
Oh.
While they're inside praying and doing like demon stuff on a Ouija board. And I'm like, I'm confused.
this is all really weird. Like, don't get me wrong. I believe in spooky stuff. I don't necessarily have anything against, like, Wiccan and whatever. But, like,
right, no.
That makes no sense. You are totally like,
I guess maybe, I mean, they're hitting all the
niches.
They're just gonna cover all their bases with all protection stuff. I mean, why not? But I was just,
it's just confused. Well, if you're trying to breach a demon with a Ouija board at the same time that a protection spell is being cast, isn't that like,
well,
opposite then, agendas?
Well, and then it's just the fact that she's like standing outside dressed like a lumberjack with her like rain boots on, and she's like, from the power of the earth to the power of the sky. Like, I'm like,
this is all too much.
This is weird.
You're doing too much.
You're doing too much. So yeah, if you want to laugh, watch it. It's pretty great. I'm probably going to keep watching it just because it makes me laugh.
Just because it's like, is it one that like tells you the history of things too? Because I think that's basically the reason I like Ghost Adventures, is because they like go through and tell the history of the different places they're at.
It kind of does, but it's like Ghost
but
Adventures.
It's, yeah, but it's not. So
it's, but it's
the
not,
same.
Not the same. No. So it's great. It's great.
Yeah, all 3 minutes of those random clips where you're just like, who's this fucking guy? Look at him. Look at his hair. I hope they show his face again. Look at his hair.
Look at his fucking nose.
Nice schnoz, bud.
Even wears the douchebag glasses like Bagginsy does. Like, it's just, it's great. I recommend it.
I
10 out of 10.
It's a good entertaining thing.
It's stupid, but
wrong,
it's
kind of entertainment they're looking for, but
yeah. But
what genre is this?
Satire? I don't understand.
I don't, what, this is like the Weird Al of
telling you, of Zach paranormal. Baggins from Wish. He's only got one arm sleeve instead of two, but he wears all black. He's got a spiky hair, douchebag glasses,
multiple chins.
Yeah, very dad bodish instead of the buff Zach Baggins, you know.
Yes, another reason why I don't mind watching Ghost Adventures.
Just put a paper bag over his head,
just go, fine. Oh hey, don't talk.
But he even talks like, in the demon world, like is great.
Oh,
10 out of 10.
I mean, if any of you are listening to it, maybe just take this as constructive criticism and not just making fun of you. But at the same time, like Christina said, she loves it.
It's funny. I mean, I don't think that's funny.
What you're trying for, but.
What?
It's entertaining. Hey. I'm going to keep watching.
All right. Should we?
Anyhow. Shall we jump in?
Yeah, I don't feel like they need to hear our entire life story over this break. So
yeah, it's true.
My body's still broken. Amanda's planning her wedding.
Uh-huh. Still has
life
passed.
Sucks.
Fingers crossed by late fall, winter, things will even keel because things will be figured out for Christina.
Yeah.
I will be less busy with like wedding and then working stuff because October's also going to be an interesting month. We may just like disappear for a little while.
And everybody's, we're getting more people liking our page.
I know.
Like, I'm so sorry we're not giving you new content, but we're trying.
There's only so much we can do.
We've had this episode ready to go for like 3 weeks.
I had to reread my research because I was like, I don't even remember what I read
I was in the hospital like twice.
Then your father.
Yeah, just
now your dogs are hacking all over the place.
I know, they got the whooping cough. The kennel cough.
They got the whooping cough.
I just wanted to say the whooping cough. All right.
Nice. Okay. All right. Buckle down.
Fucking focus.
I have to go do more wedding stuff after this, so I gotta get done. I also am probably gonna have to go potty after your story, so.
Cool.
Because I'm drinking coffee, so you know how it goes. Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to tell you about the disappearance of Daniel Robinson.
Okay.
It is a very new case. Like, it happened in 2021, but it happened like the month before the Gabby Petito.
Okay. Mine's a new case too.
And it was one of those ones that people were talking about how it's great that Gabby Petito got so much coverage, but there were multiple people that had gone missing like right before her that got not even close to the same coverage.
Right.
And Daniel Robinson is African-American. So there was also the, why isn't he getting the same
like kind of thing? Then this cute little white girl that's...
Right.
Yeah.
But I just think it's a very interesting case. There's a couple of ways it could have gone. And I, or like a couple of theories that are like, and I don't really know because I think it's, we'll get into it. Okay.
Okay.
Getting ahead of myself. So he was born and raised in South Carolina to his father, David, and his mother, Melissa. He was born with only one arm, but proved to everyone that it's like he's missing like the lower half of his forearm.
Okay.
That it would not stop him from achieving whatever goals he applied himself for. He was fitted for a prosthesis, but refused to wear it. He taught himself to play video games, play the French horn, and then the trombone, all one-handed. And then he joined the marching band. He also enjoyed weightlifting and playing football. He was described as being a passionate person full of curiosity with a deep appreciation for nature. It led him to study geology at the College of Charleston in South Carolina, and he was a part of a fraternity and graduated with honors from there. He then attended a course in Tucson and soon after was offered a job by the engineering firm Matrix New World, and he stayed in Arizona.
Okay.
So he got his own apartment in Tempe, and then he kind of talked one of his sisters into moving out to Arizona as well, because they were really close. And so they weren't living together, but they were living like close to each other.
Okay.
He had a side job delivering groceries for Instacart that allowed him to make additional money. It was at this side job that he met a girl. I'm not going to give her name because she has no like connection to his disappearance.
Okay.
And I feel like she's been mentioned a lot and it's just not really fair to her once I get into this. So he delivered her and her friend booze, ordered to her home in Phoenix, in a Phoenix suburb, on June 12th. The woman and her friend who was with her invited him in. They thought that he was very nice. And she also said that probably they were both drunk. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have done it. And it was kind of not the smartest move.
Well, right. I mean, and everybody does stupid stuff sometimes.
So the woman and Daniel exchanged numbers, but she insisted that nothing else happened. They hadn't gone on a date or anything like that. They were just kind of chatting. Within a week, he showed up at her house unannounced. And they had like a brief exchange. And she was like, this is kind of weird. He's like, I just couldn't stop thinking about you. She later told the police when she was questioned that showing up at her house unannounced made her extremely uncomfortable. And she told him she didn't want them hanging. She didn't see them hanging out.
Okay.
The next day he turned up at her house again. And she saw him like through her Ring camera. So she texted him and was like, this is not normal or acceptable. If someone has expressed that you've made them uncomfortable, you need to back off. He texted back, do you hate me? She's like, I don't hate you, but you need to leave me alone. He then took 15 hours to respond and he sent her the text. The world can get better, but I'll have to take all the time I can or we can, whatever to name it. I'll either see you again or I'll never see you again.
Okay.
So it was kind of like
a little cryptic.
Cryptic, weird. She actually brought the texts and the issue to the police and they gave her the information for filing a restraining order because they said it was like borderline stalking behavior.
Right. It's like clearly something is not okay.
So 18 hours later, he disappeared from a remote work site deep in the Arizona desert outside of the town of Buckeye. So he was last seen on June 23rd. 2021 when he showed up for work at this remote job site. It was his second of the day. Basically, he was an engineer for this company, and then they had like construction and other scientists who were like reviewing the wells out in this area.
Okay. Yep.
It was kind of a cool and rainy day for the desert, basically. So he met up with a pump technician whose name was Ken Elliott. who had they had never met before, and they went to work on a deep well. Elliot told the police that Robinson was saying things that did not make sense. He was kind of like looking up at the sky with the rain and like spinning around and like kind of talking weird, I guess.
Okay.
He then said he asked him if he wanted to go with him to Phoenix to rest. And Elliot told him that he had work to do because they had just started the day and he had just gotten to the job site. And then 15 minutes after that Ken Elliott had arrived, Daniel just basically got in his car and drove away. Didn't say anything. Just got in his car and drove away.
Okay.
When he was done with his job and still concerned about Robinson, Elliott followed his tire tracks because it was raining. So the sand kind of, you could see his tire tracks. And found that instead of going left at the T junction in the road to return to Phoenix, he had turned right, which led him into like the deep into the desert. Like there was like, nothing out there.
Why are you what? Okay.
So he called the company Daniel worked for and like reported it, but just kind of went about his day to a different job and finished his day. So people from Daniel's work were like, the fuck is going on? This isn't like him. He doesn't, you know, this is weird. So they went to his sister's house to tell her like what happened and like ask her if they'd seen Daniel. And she was like, no, and immediately called her father, David.
And she's like, no.
So David indicated that his daughter told him that one of Daniel's coworkers showed up at her apartment in Phoenix asking if she'd seen her brother. And at first David tried to do like his due diligence by he had his daughter go to Daniel's apartment, called all the son's friends he knew and his son's cell phone. And when he realized it had been over 6 hours since Daniel had like talked to anyone or had last been seen by anyone, he got worried and he contacted the police. They told him they had to wait, I don't know, 24, 48 hours because he's an adult and allowed to go missing.
Yeah.
And he was upset that basically they kind of brushed him off and didn't seem to take his disappearance seriously. So he grabbed basically anything he could from his house, threw it in his car and drove to Arizona.
He's like, fine, I'll go fucking find him.
Right. So the day that he was reported missing by his father, police did state that they searched the ground near the job site and they did enter him into the missing persons database. They just didn't do like an extensive ground search because, so I mean, fair enough.
Right.
The next couple of days that followed, however, they said that they searched near Robinson's job site, continued, and that they searched his apartment. They tried to ping his phone for location, tried to access the vehicle system for GPS data, but could not find any. They did aerial searches, interviews with coworkers, and financial record reviews were done, and all of them did not turn up any trace of David.
Okay, so he is...
Or Daniel, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think I get Daniel and David because...
The DA. Close.
The DA, sorry. So, any trace of Daniel.
Yeah.
However, on July 19th, basically, roughly a month after Daniel Robinson disappeared, a rancher named Brandon, bless you.
Sorry.
A rancher named Brandon Shelton discovered Daniel's slate blue Jeep Renegade on its side at the bottom of a 20-foot ravine with the airbags deployed.
That's not good. Okay. No.
So when his Jeep was found, there was a multi-agency search and investigators processed the data from his recovered phone and from the vehicle. Based on the issues with the woman and his erratic behavior before he disappeared, the police report paints basically a picture of a man, a young man who's scorned and perhaps depressed, and that Robinson walked into the desert where he stripped off his clothes and wandered from his car.
Okay.
Which is a narrative that David, his father, does not recognizes fitting his son at all and doesn't agree with. Basically, his trust in the cops kind of went away completely, even more when the Jeep was found because it was 3 miles from his work site.
Okay.
So they said they had searched the grounds extensively and done aerial searches, but this Jeep would have been in clear view of any aerial searches because it was literally 3 miles from the job site.
Okay.
So either that truck was not there when they were doing the searches, or they didn't do as an extensive search as they claimed.
Right. So something is not
right.
Something's weird.
Yes. Which is why I was like, this case is interesting because it's very, there's a lot of weird things. Near the Jeep, what appeared to be his clothes on the ground next to it, his wallet and phone in the car. The police told David that he may have just wanted to, that they think Daniel may have just wanted to leave his family and become like disappear. And David said, my son is a geologist. He's a scientist. He has a brilliant mind. He's not dumb enough to not take any money or anything with him if he wanted to disappear. And why would he have taken his clothes off?
Right. Like, that's, what is the point of that?
Right.
On top of all the other things.
So the rancher whose cattle graze 14,000 acres in the Buckeye area is convinced that the car had only been in the ravine that led to the river a short while when he came across it. Okay. He said it was clean and the cows would have found it. He's like, my cows would have found it because they're very, cows are just a very inquisitive animal. I would have found them down in that ravine like a month, weeks ago, if there is a new thing in their pasture, basically.
Right.
He pointed out that Robinson's Red Wing boot, work boots, was stuck under the truck. So he's like, it makes no sense. If you were delirious and ripped off all your clothes, wandered into the desert, you wouldn't stick one of your shoes under the car.
Right.
His theory, because of where it's where they are located in the air, in the desert, a lot of drug runners, a lot of characters and things like that are out in the desert. So like, even when they were searching, they were like, you're doing this at your own risk. Some ranchers will shoot before and ask questions later. There's some drug runners out here. You know, it's not right. Like the safest place.
Right. Like something is gonna happen, right. Most likely if, yeah. Okay.
Ugh. So his personal theory, the rancher's theory, was that someone deliberately wrecked that vehicle out there. David agreed, basically, and enlisted the help of Jeff McGrath, a former cop and vehicular crimes investigator, to take a look at Daniel's car. When McGrath saw a photo of the car, it immediately struck him as odd that the cops were saying that he drove it down in there, basically, that the damage to the vehicle didn't match the location it was found in.
Right.
According to the police report, the Jeep had suffered significant damage consistent with a front impact that caused it to roll. The front window was shattered and there was substantial damage to the lower front as well as the windshield and the roof. However, McGrath was skeptical of the roll theory, though, and he obtained the car's black box, which allowed him to ascertain that the car was going about 30 miles per hour before the airbags deployed.
Oh.
That sent up alarm bells because he used his own vehicle to see if that speed was possible in the rugged terrain. And his he stated that it wasn't, like, that 30 miles an hour was not.
You're going to hurt yourself. Something's going to go wrong if you're going that fast. That's
also
weird.
The car had traveled 11 miles after the airbags were deployed.
What?
According to the records.
How did anybody drive it with the airbags deployed?
Right.
Weird.
So it raises suspicions even further that the vehicle, whether it was by Daniel or somebody else, was crashed somewhere else and then brought and dropped into that ravine.
Right. To either, like, you know, pull someone in the wrong direction or just to get rid of and hopefully nobody will find it.
Right. And he said that the damage to the vehicle appeared to show that it had been hit above the windshield. It looked like a bat or a pipe or could have been a large rock, something blunt. It didn't look like it had rolled. The driver's seatbelt was buckled, and despite the severe damage to the Jeep, there was no blood found inside. Robinson's wallet, phone, and credit cards were all in the car, and his clothes and t-shirt were turned inside out. Shorts, an orange work vest, boots, and two mismatched black socks were all just kind of scattered nearby. Yeah, it was.
So that's that. That's not something that happens at a crash. So was right. Is that left there purposely to make it seem like he was there?
Well, and the thing was, is one of the socks was Nike and the other was Adidas. But then as they were searching and the search parties found another black Nike sock 3 miles away in the desert.
Okay. So,
three miles from the crash. Yes.
Okay.
They can't explain it, but it's another reason they believe there's more to the case than right. what meets the eye.
Definitely. Both seems.
So both McGrath and Daniel's father believe that the Buckeye police did not carry out a thorough investigation into his son's disappearance, basically.
Right.
And they point out that Daniel's clothes, possessions, and car were handed over to his father as soon as he arrived in South Carolina, or in Arizona from South Carolina. So those items should be considered evidence if a crime is found to have been committed. So they right. should have not handed all that over until they had cleared that it was not a crime scene. And they must have done it like immediately. They said this isn't a crime scene because they gave it all to him.
You don't get into it, even if it was like a car crash, let's say.
Right.
Even if it was a car crash, you don't get into a crash and just eject your clothing. You know what I mean? Like, where is he?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So, and then police actually didn't do their full investigation into the vehicle until November, months after McGrath did the investigation onto it. And basically they did it just to dispute McGrath's findings, not to like try and find.
Basically just to be Daniel. Like, see, we did. We yeah. did what we were supposed to.
So.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Their findings say that the car attempted to drive up the other side of the ravine and then rolled. So they believe that he drove into the ravine and then was trying to get out of it. And he tried to drive up the other side and rolled the vehicle. I still
can't get over the like deployed airbags.
So then
for 11 miles.
I'm getting there.
I'm sorry. I'm like, but how? Okay.
So in regards to the extra 11 miles, they contacted the Jeep headquarters and said that there have been times where similar discrepancies have been noted by Jeep dealership service departments and other crash reconstructionists. So there have been times where, whether it jarred the vehicle, the speedometer, the thing that tracks the miles or whatever, that the miles are off based on when the airbags deployed.
Okay. Or what if? You were like on auto, what is it called?
Cruise control.
And you flip and the wheels keep going. It's going to count as if you're driving, but that's 11 miles. And if he was only going 30 miles an hour, that would be like a full 20 minutes.
Right. So.
Okay.
Again, so there have been similar discrepancies before noted by mm-hmm. Jeep. However, McGrath doesn't really agree with that. He basically is, what he's most frustrated about is the fact that they hired an expert to rebut his findings, like I had said, not to actually help find
right
Daniel. So McGrath also claims that some of the most significant findings in the police report have been his and Daniel's work, not the Buckeye Police Department's, including the discovery of human remains. So while they were doing like community search parties, not with mm-hmm. the police, they were invited for everyone, but most of the time the police did not show up. They found a skull on July 31st near where Daniel's Jeep was found. The medical examiner determined that it was not Daniel's and it was significantly older than just a few months.
Okay.
Then on November 6th, one of their search parties uncovered more remains, two human femurs, hip bones, and vertebrae. Again, the medical examiner deduced that they were not Daniel's, but he says that they have since been contacted by a woman who believes them to be her husband and is close to closing that case.
Okay.
So McGrath estimates that they have found at least 4 human remains on their search, but can't say if they belong to 2 or more people. There had been other bones that we suspect were human. The medical examiners reviewed them. Some of them we haven't received an answer on. We just got that information that it's not Daniel.
Hey.
So, but the police have also kind of claimed we found more humans in the search for, you know, and it's like, no, you didn't find them.
No, see, you weren't, no, you're lying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So McGrath doesn't think the remains are connected, but he also has stated in interviews that if we keep finding bodies out here, we're going to have to try and connect them because it's just too much. Too coincidental. Coincidental.
Weird. Okay.
So meanwhile, David and McGrath are leaving no stone unturned. Basically, they're taking tips from anyone who has them, including psychics. The femurs were actually found in an area a medium had told them to search. McGrath has his theories about what happened to Daniel. So he has 2 basic theories. He believes that because Daniel was known to smoke marijuana, that it's possible that he smoked something that was laced.
Okay.
And so that would explain his kind of weird behavior leading up to his disappearance. And kind of his, and the fact that he just kind of, you know, taking your clothes off. If he did take the clothes off and wander into the desert, kind of, you may be on a bad trip, basically.
Right.
The other theory was that he believes that Robinson was upset about the woman's rejection of him and went on an all-night video game binge, which he was known to do.
Okay.
And then he turned up at work. He was so tired and kind of, if he had done that for a couple of days, could have been a little delirious, could have been like overtired. And that he deliberately drove into the desert just a little ways out of the way to take a nap.
Okay.
Because remember he had asked the guy if he wanted to go into town and rest for a bit.
Yeah.
And he said, and at that point, I think he saw somebody, not a good person, found him and that something bad happened to him.
Right. Or he stumbled upon something he shouldn't have or.
Right.
Okay.
And that he believes that the other possibility is that they hurt him, killed him, did something to him, and then crashed his car because that ravine had been searched and there was no car in it.
Okay.
So on January 27th, 2022, the Buckeye police performed searches on 2 wells, but they did not find anything relating to the case. Investigators are following up on tips regarding the disappearance, but according to the website, the police created with information on Robinson's case, no foul play is suspected.
Okay.
Over a year later, David is still in Arizona. First, he was living out of hotels, and now he has a 1-bedroom apartment. He basically burned through his entire retirement money and what was supposed to be his kind of his retirement. And he now spends basically scouring the desert for his son. David believes that Daniel would not have left his family on his own. He remains that the orchestrator of all of his son's search parties. He's had thousands of people come to search and kind of follow his cause both online and offline. Until there is proof of otherwise, he believes that Daniel is still alive and is missing.
Okay.
So there is a website called Please Help Find Daniel Robinson, as well as a Twitter. He has managed searches on his own. He invites law enforcement every time. There was originally 20 searchers at a time, has now grown to be hundreds. The group is searching on a grid, and they have covered about 19,000 acres of land.
Wow.
So if anyone has any information about the case, they should contact the Buckeye Police Department tip line at 623-349-6411. There's a website also for anonymous tips. And there is a bunch of information on pleasehelpfinddaniel.com.
What a weird case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how could there not be foul play.
I know. Like, I just don't.
It's not reasonable to me to think that that's even an option.
Like, let's say he did crash his car into the ravine.
Right.
And he somehow managed to not have any injuries because there was no blood or anything in the car. And let's say he hit his head, but again, no injury, like that would cause blood. And it caused him to be delirious.
Okay. Then what?
I mean, I guess the delirium could cause him to take off his clothes. But to me, that would be like scattered further. Like it wouldn't all be at the crash site.
Yeah, because if he's delirious and then he can't figure out what to do and then he gets hot because he's in the desert and he's like, what do you do when you're hot? Take off your clothes.
So he's wandering around, but you would think that like they wouldn't all be like next to each other. It would be like, I climbed out of the ravine. Oh my God, I'm hot. Take my shirt off and left it. Walked further. Like, why is his boot under the vehicle? But there's no injuries. Like, it's just.
Just weird stuff. Almost, and especially if they did search it. And then it was there, like
it just seemed, where was he for a month then before he crashed that? It just seems odd to me that it seems almost like the clothes were thrown down into the ravine and then the car was crashed on top of them.
Yeah, it's like they dumped the things.
And then the fact that there were two mismatched socks, but then they found the pair, the sock to one of them like 3 miles away in a different location. Right.
So are you dumping multiple people that?
Yeah.
You know, and it got like mixed together, their stuff. But then they also found the other bodies. And so is this just a drug running type dump of situation site, where kind they're of like, when someone gets in the way or sees something, we just get rid. And this is where we're going to throw all the stuff in the bodies because nobody goes out here because it's nasty desert.
Right. I don't know, it's just a weird
man.
It's a weird scenario, weird case that is surprising to me that has not had more coverage.
Yeah,
because there were like when I was looking up information, there were no major news sites that had an article regarding it.
And it's Daniel
Robinson.
I knew it was an R. And then when I went to, because I just want to see what the disappearance of Daniel Robinson. I just want to see a picture of him because it always helps me like imagine things more. Oh, he cute.
I know. It's just.
Oh, you're cute. Hey. Weird. Huh. And he looks so young.
Yeah.
Baby.
Just a baby.
Oh, boy. Well, gosh, that didn't help me feel any better about the case at all.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Shoot. I also have a newer case. Mine's actually 2022. And we may have to watch for, like, updates because shit's still, like, semi-fresh because it was, like, April is when.
Okay.
It happened. So shall I begin?
Yes. Wait, how long into this are we?
I'm unsure.
Okay, well, just start.
Okay, fucking Zoom. We're gonna have words. All right. So I'm gonna tell you about the case of Orzolia Gall. Okay. So we're in Forest Hills, Queens, New York. All right. April 16th, 2022, there was a call to 911 about a suspicious bag thrown off of the road onto a stretch next to the Kew Gardens in Queens.
Weird. Okay. Stuff a body in that, huh?
Maybe. It was a large black duffel bag.
And always.
It looked like it was leaking blood onto the sidewalk.
I've definitely heard about this.
Yeah.
But also, why is it always like a large black duffel bag?
Because that's what can fit.
I know, things. But like there's so many different options for duffel bags. Why is it always?
Why must it be a black duffel?
I know. It's just like, where do you get those that fit the body parts? You buy those at Amazon, Walmart? I've never had a duffel bag big enough to put bodies in.
Okay, and maybe this is a weird tangent, but like the luggage size duffel bags, they're expensive.
I know. You have the kind of cash to just throw around bodies in your duffel bags?
This is ridiculous.
Listen,
especially when you just throw it on a road.
I know. Like, I have a hard shell suitcase that I have duct taped together because shit's expensive and I'm not buying another one.
I still have the luggage set that I won at senior prom after party.
I'm just saying, it just seems a little ridiculous. But anyway, who's got the money to be throwing duffel bags all over?
We are focusing on the wrong thing right now. There's blood coming out of this duffel bag, which means that there's probably questionable contents.
Listen, you're never going to get blood out of a duffel bag. I'm just saying.
No, you're never going to get blood out of anything, man. My tailor, when I went and got my dress fitted, said that the only thing that takes your, like, the stain of your blood off of fabric is your own spit. For whatever reason, your DNA does it. She goes, so if for whatever reason you got pricked by a pin, I would need you to spit on the dress and it would take it out. She's like, it's amazing. It's the only thing I've ever found to get blood out. It's like, weird. How funny is that?
So if I want to clean up a crime scene, I need to keep
their spit,
their bodily fluids.
I don't know that, like, do you think the amount of blood that would be in a crime scene would be helped.
You have to keep them alive and make them spit, keep spitting in a bucket.
Spit for me.
Spit in a bucket. No, but their DNA would still be all over the place. It'd be just different kind of DNA.
Right. They're like, why do you have saliva everywhere? I don't know. They were a drooly guy who came to visit. Okay. Anyway, that was just a random thing that I learned from the tailor. And I was like, that's interesting.
Also, what the fuck is your tailor doing?
She works with pins and I'm sure she's bled on a few things. So the only way she's found that works, just a little and it wipes out. I was like, weird. Okay, cool. Anyway. So as the police were on their way to this duffel, there was a second 911 call put in from a man named Glenn Van Norstrand, who was headed home while walking his dog. And he saw it was in the morning. Okay. So he saw a large wheeled bag, like a wheeled duffel, one of those that has the little on the backside.
Again, shit's expensive.
I know. On the sidewalk. Also.
So a different bag in a different location.
See, and that's where I was confused because, and I don't know if it's just because it is as new as it is. Not all the details are, but I think I want to say they're talking about the same bag because they don't talk about a second bag, but like the details didn't line up as the same other than the color.
Okay.
And the, like that it was a bag. And they said a different road because he was on the road. They were talking about the park in the other call.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same bag from what I could deduce. But if not, I apologize. There's not a lot of details right now about this case other than like, oh, the suspect has been arrested and whatever, you know.
Way to ruin the story.
One of those new ones where I'm like, whatever. It's fine. Bury the lead. Anyway. So... he thought it was weird that there was, or he didn't think it was weird that there was garbage thrown there because it was like a normal dump site. It's like right next to a bridge and people tend to just like throw out things that are too big for them to throw in their garbage there. Mm-hmm. It's one of those sweet dump sites. His dog got all worked up though when they were getting close to it and he pulled him like towards the bag. And when they got closer, that's when he realized that there was blood leaking out of the bag.
Okay.
He assumed that it must have been a dead animal or something because, again, people dump... he's like, I found people dumping, like, dead pets, sad face, and stuff there because they don't know what to do with it because you're not supposed to, like, bury them in town, you know? So he gently, like, pushed it with his foot to see if it was moving. Right. Or like if someone hit a dog or so. Oh, fuck. If someone hit a dog or something, assumed it was some sort of a dead animal. So he like gently nudged it with his foot to make sure it wasn't alive and it wasn't going to like attack him if he tried to open it up, you know? Mm-hmm. Or if it was alive, he wanted to, you know, get it out. And so he nudged it. Nothing happened. So he leaned down to look into the bag and he found a human foot when he opened it up. Can you imagine? Can you fucking imagine?
No, I can't.
I hate it.
Why would you open it? Don't open it.
Well, I don't know if he just, like, if it was an animal or if, like, somebody's animal had, like, babies and they tried to get rid of all of the, you know, like, you just never know. So he's like, I'm just gonna take a look. And then he saw the foot.
And immediately regretted his decision.
Yeah. And he said to a reporter once that he just saw a pair of bare feet, pale bare feet. And he just thought, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, oh, funny guy. From okay.
Wisconsin?
I know, right? Nope, we're in New York. So,
oh my God, I can't even do it now.
I can't. Nope. Now you're just stuck in the Midwest.
Stuck in the Midwest accent.
So Glenn thought it may be part of a mannequin at first because there was no blood that he could see other than like kind of leaking out of the bag. Or
people always think it's a mannequin.
I know. Well, and I think that's just like naturally your brain is like, I need to make sense of this.
Newsflash.
It's not
a mannequin.
So that's, I literally wrote a test dummy or something. And then I was like, don't they all just hope that's what it is?
It's never a mannequin.
But he said that like the skin even looked hard and like plasticky. So he was like, I don't know. Maybe this is some stupid prank, right? Like someone's trying to screw with me. So he unzipped it a little bit more. And that's when he found the rest of the leg and some black jeans were on the leg. And he saw a belt and the lower half of a woman's torso. So that's where I'm like, maybe it is two bags, maybe it's one bag. They don't really decipher. And he realized that it is one bag because he realized underneath it was curled up the whole body of the woman. Was like
she tiny?
Fetal position. Very petite, yes.
Okay. I was like, this is... What size duffel bag are we talking about here?
Yeah. So he obviously called the police because he was like, oh, this is not a dummy. This is not some weird prank that someone's trying to get on camera, like finding a human foot in a bag.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that people just like naturally hope that it's not real. I'm just going to my brain is going to make it not real.
Oh, 100%. But still.
Apparently, this is a place where the police had found dumped bodies before, too, by the way. Like, it seems like a really classy place. This guy's just walking his dog. So the police were
walking his dog.
Unfortunately, they weren't surprised by this discovery at all. The woman had no ID on her. Glenn helped the police further as once they got there, he gave them his statement. He resumed walking his dog home, right? And on his way home, he noticed there was a large, dark, bloody streak on the sidewalk that lasted for like 9 blocks.
Sorry. What?
Yeah.
So the person dragged the duffel bag
for 9 blocks, which is what, like a quarter to a half a mile in
Gross.
New York. So from the dump site, it went all the way straight to a front door of a fancy house on Juno Street, about a half a mile away.
What a dumbass.
Yeah. So police made an emergency entry into the house, obviously, and found that on the first floor, there was blood as well as in the basement. So clearly there was a struggle on multiple levels of the house. And within the mess of all of that, they did find a bloody knife. So, yikes. Then on the third floor, they found Leo Klein, who was 13 years old, who had just woken up from the noise of the police making an emergency entry.
Of course.
And he told the police that he lived there with his parents. And his brother, who was 17, he said his father and his brother were out of town and he wasn't exactly sure where his mom was because she was supposed to be there.
Your mom was in a duffel bag down the street, kid.
Oh my God. I can't. Poor kid. Mm-hmm. They had cuffed Leo and brought him into the station because they're like, I mean, the only person who has any connection right now is the 13-year-old kid, so we're gonna bring you in. 13, really, and where's your
handcuffs?
Yeah,
come on now.
No joke. I'm like, he doesn't even have his like dad or anybody, or like mm-hmm. any adult with him. Come on, kids. At the station, Glenn was giving his statement because after he brought his dog home, he went to the station and did like an official statement about the streak and about the whatever, because they have to have it officially on the books, you know? And Glenn reported that the teen was being dragged around in the handcuffs and he had no shoes on and he still looked like he was in his pajamas. Then they questioned the minor with no adult present. So Glenn was like, this is bullshit. You're like dragging this kid around.
You can't do that.
Yeah. This Glenn guy's just like, nah, I'm calling everybody out right now. Mm-hmm. We found a dead body. There's blood on the sidewalk. These police are fucking beating up a 13-year-old. He's like, I'll make a statement right now. It was determined that he wasn't involved. Obviously, he was sleeping.
You're right. Like,
he wasn't involved and he was released to his family member, which they didn't say which one because he's a minor and doesn't mm-hmm. matter. The body was officially ID'd as 51-year-old Orsolia Gall, which would be Leo's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Leo found out that his mom was dead by the police accusing him of her murder.
Oh my God.
Yeah. 13-year-old. Like, did you killed your mom. It's like,
did he sue the police for fucking hope
so. I mean, this was in April. This was only a few months ago, so I'm sure they don't even have any of that lined up yet, but.
Emotional distress?
No joke. What the fuck? Orsolia was what people called happy and loving. She was always friendly and loved traveling. If you, like, look at her social media, it has a bunch of pictures of them traveling around with their sons and her husband, and you know, just very upper class esque happy mm-hmm. family on social media. Forensic examinations found that her throat had been slashed, she was stabbed 58 times and had defensive wounds. Homicide due to sharp force injuries to the throat is the reason she died.
So this is a close-up rage killing.
Exactly.
Somebody knew her.
The flurry of violence pointed to the crime being a crime of passion, mm-hmm. they believe. And the examiner...
Hashtag overkill.
A little bit. The examiner specifically said that with this much brutality, like you said, most likely know each other. A husband, sometimes a child, which is why they were like, you know, like a close family member mm-hmm. is what they were thinking. The two other family members were out of town looking at colleges as far as anyone knew. Where does that, how would they be there to do it? Right. You know what I mean? So then Leo is the only family member around. Orsolia lived in Forest Hills with Howard Klein, her husband, and her sons Leo and Jamie for almost 10 years. So they've been there for about a decade.
And I just don't understand how they could think that a 13-year-old, unless he was like the size of the Rock, could drag a body.
And like, yeah, and that's what I mean.
Not only drag it, but be able to lift it and shove it into a duffel bag and then drag it 9 blocks.
Right.
Like, that just...
So Orsolia was originally from Hungary. She had met Howard in Budapest in 1994. She was 23 and he was 25. They exchanged love letters back and forth. Then they took a vacation together to Thailand. And when Howard was about to head home to New York, to continue the pursuit of his master's degree. I can't talk today. I think like stuttering over things. He basically just was like, just come with me to Orsolia. And she did. Aww. And she lived in New York ever since. Orsolia worked in Manhattan until she
had kids and they decided that she wanted to be at home with them. In 2012, the family moved to Forest Hills and all seemed fantastic. You know, mm-hmm. it seemed like they had the dream family lifestyle. The police then were given a door cam video, like after all of, okay, sorry. We're going to jump back into the story now. I wanted mm-hmm. to give like a little detail on Orzolia. The police were given a door cam video from the house, from a house that was on the like blockage where the bag was dragged. And this kind of actually opened up to be able to start looking into more than just the family. Cause as of right now, all they were like, it's a crime of passion. Probably someone who knew her.
Mm-hmm.
And on this video, there was a dark figure rolling this large black duffel bag down the sidewalk at about 4:30 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Police also announced that Howard and Jamie were obviously people of interest. They hadn't gotten back from where they were yet. But remember, Howard and his son were in Portland looking at colleges at the time of the murder. And according to plans and according to Twitter, because social media is a big thing now, you know,
mm-hmm.
He also announced that they were on their way back to New York and then he deleted it. It's like he, okay, so we're just going to keep going. I'm not going to get ahead of myself. Their early return may have been prompted by a message that Howard, the dad, received from Orzolia. From a number about Orzolia. Your wife sent me to jail some years ago when you were living near Austin Street in Forest Hills. I'm back. Don't call the police or I'll kill your whole family, is what this message that he got was.
Sorry, what? I'm going to call the police?
Yeah. So then Howard got a call from the police about the discovery of his wife's body within hours of that happening. Cause he was like, well, I need to go home. So he was making plans to get home early
mm-hmm.
and figure it out. And so, the world was looking at Howard, paparazzi and commentators, and everybody was basically like, look at this shitbag. Like, clearly something was up.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that he deleted that. Well, he got a call from the police saying that they found her body because he was like, oh, coming home early. Got a call saying they found her body and he deleted it because he was like, oh, well, I don't need to bust this wide open. This is like, we need to be quiet about this until we figure out what's going on.
Well, also, if he put coming home early and then thought, well, maybe I shouldn't put that on Twitter since the guy is clearly, who texted me is clearly
exactly.
Like,
yeah. Well, and that's where he was just like, everybody, all reporters and everything were like, it seems like he was trying to establish alibis because he like announced that he was in Portland doing whatever, announced what he was doing with whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he announced and then took that off. Like, you know, like it was a secret. So everybody looked at him as if he was trying to hide something.
Mm-hmm.
There was no forced entry to the house. So the killer had to have known or used a spare key to get in. They hid in the barbecue where there was also evidence that the killer was in the house for like a prolonged period of time. So it's like they hid until they could come out and surprise Orzolia.
Which is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Orzolia had once reported. I wrote the wrong name. Howard had once reported that his wife was missing after she went on like a midnight walk. So this was another thing that people were digging up, that he had called 911 at about 7 a.m. on May 29th of 2020, so about 2 years mm-hmm. before that, and reported that she didn't return from her walk. And then he called back about 30 minutes later and was like, oh, we found her, she's fine, like, don't worry about it. So I don't know, people were acting as if it was like a normal thing for her to disappear, or that he was trying to make it normalized, or that, you know, mm-hmm. that she
just
did
a whole bunch
questionable
of speculations
things. Exactly. And in 2004, his son Leo, when he was 10 months, they reported him missing too, but then they had to call in and say, no, just kidding. So they couldn't find him for a while. So they panicked, called the police, mm-hmm. said, we can't find our son. And then they called back being like, okay, we're good. We found him. We're good. Don't
Just kidding. We found him.
So it sounds like he's just kind of a panicky guy anyway about things. The police were trying to put the timeline together for her death. And on the 15th, the day before the body was found, she told her neighbors that she was going to Lincoln Center to see an opera with some friends. But her phone was not matching that story when they went to the phone pings. So now we look into the phone records. Orzolia was communicating with three separate men on the night that she was killed, one of which she had gone to the concert with. So she was stepping out on the marriage. By 11 p.m., she was in Forest Hills again after coming home alone on the train. She stopped into a station house bar that she just basically like was ending the night, having a nightcap there.
And her 13-year-old son was just hanging out at home by himself?
Yeah. 13, though, I mean, I was babysitting at 12, so I can't really...
I mean, it's fine. I'm just saying.
For, yeah, like going out and having a scandalous, like, affair-ish... Yeah. No victim blaming, but just saying questionable choices. She stopped by the station bar, and the police believe that Orzolia got home right around 12:20 a.m. Okay. They believe the murder entered about 20 minutes before she got home, is their estimation by when, I'm assuming when, like, Leo went to sleep and whatever. Okay. Then... Remember, by 4:30 a.m., the killer was caught on that Nest footage camera dragging her dead body. Right. So within a few hours, she was dead and in a bag and being dragged to the dump site.
Right.
There was a note found on Orzolia's fridge that said, find a new handyman. So they were like, okay, so what happened to the old handyman? Why do they need a new handyman? So here, let's get into the men she's talking to.
She banging the handyman?
Well... Okay, so the three guys she's talking to, one was a man who had been doing odd jobs around the residence named David Benola, Amanda. Get it in your head. I keep wanting to make it more fancy than it is. But he was a night owl, and he played guitar, rode a bike. He kind of looked like, according to the messages exchanged that, well, it looked like, according to the messages that were exchanged, that not long after starting to work for the family, the two became, let's say, inappropriate.
Romantically involved.
Yeah. He would comment on her pictures and social media and whatnot, like, innocent, but not innocent when you look at, like, the private conversations. Mm-hmm. And he seemed actually pretty obsessive over her.
Okay.
There was a flower shop near where he lived, and the owner said that he bought a red rose nightly and had to show the man pictures, like they showed him pictures of Orzolia. Well, he showed him pictures of Orzolia and was like, this is who I'm in love with. And so when the face came up as a murder victim, he was like, I know this girl. We need to, like, talk. So the flower shop guy talked to the police. So he was doing this, like, nightly for a year to give to her a rose every single night. Detectives were able to figure out that Orzolia had ended things with Benola in early April of 2022. So that timeline lines up. And Benola was 44. He spent a lot of his time in a nearby Starbucks. And one of the baristas said that he had been there for years and reported that he just was kind of creepy.
Mm-hmm.
He would just watch the baristas work and make comments on how they look and leave them little notes in the tip jar. Police were called multiple times because they were like, this man just like is making everyone uncomfortable.
Ick.
Benola created a YouTube channel where he just collected videos and made playlists. He didn't make any videos.
Okay.
One playlist that was about like violent crimes in their area, and one playlist that was about like sex and women, you know, like the pickup artist kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
The police were closely monitoring Bonola, and at 6:05 a.m. the morning of the murder, there was a security cam video of Bonola walking down the street with a bandage on his hand.
Okay,
so it's like an hour and a half ish after the Nest footage caught him, the not him specifically, but caught the guy dragging the bag. He had also gone to the fast care clinic that same day for cuts on his hand and was sent to the hospital to get stitches. So the police picked up Bonola's trash from his garbage garbage day. And in there, they found brown boots covered with blood and his bloody shirt. They had to go back to his neighborhood to find Bonola, who I guess spotted them and came up to the car and said, "Hey, you're looking for me," basically. So they went to his neighborhood to find him, and he like walked up to their car.
Okay.
Like, "Hi, you're looking for me." So they picked him up. When they brought him in, he confessed with like no coaxing. So it was him on the next camera. Then he ate a bagel and reiterated his confession on videotape, because when they did it, they recorded it and they're like, "Hey, would you want to say it again so that we can have it on video?" "Oh, sure. You know, I'll do that."
Mm.
He told them that they were on and off for about 2 years, him and Orzolia, and that she had broken it off again recently. He went to her house to attempt to make up that early morning, and they began to argue when Orzolia led him down to the basement to not wake up Leo because he was sleeping upstairs.
Oh.
So he's like, she's like, "I don't want to wake up Leo. Let's go downstairs and continue talking." Once they're there, they argued a bit more and it heated up, and Bonola ended up snapping, as he says.
Mm.
He grabbed a nearby knife and slit her throat and then stabbed her over and over and over again.
Jesus. <Your face.
laughs> Then he grabbed her son's hockey bag. So that's where the duffel.
That makes sense. Hockey mm-hmm. bags are very large.
Mm-hmm. Because of all of the pads and stuff they have to carry in.
Okay. That answers the bag question.
Exactly.
I was like, how fucking big is this bag? It's big.
And stuffed her body into it. And she's like a small woman too. So on top of that.
Yeah, but you could fit my girth in a hockey bag. So.
Ugh. My girth, not the appropriate time. I'll talk to you about it in a second.
Is it the TikTok I sent you?
Yeah. Anyhow. Okay, there it is. He also said that he was the one who sent the message to Howard. So he confessed to all of it. He's like, "I sent Howard the message. I did this." He was trying to cover his tracks because I guess it was Orzolia either worked in some sort of a law firm in Manhattan before. And so they had issues with it before. So he's like, sent me to jail. So the question was, did he have the knife from the kitchen on him, or did he bring it down, or was it with him, or was it in the basement? Because that will determine whether it was premeditated or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because depending on if you grabbed it before you guys started having a heated argument and you snapped or not, will show if you wanted to do it before you, passion or not. Anyway, so then Bonola changed his statement again. So he said it again. Now he's changing it a little bit to kind of meet, I think, the evidence that maybe they were like, "Well, why did this happen?"
Mm-hmm.
So he now says that he had gone to her house after finding out that she had given him HIV, which she had contracted throughout her extramarital affairs, according to him. He also said that he couldn't take the fact that she was now interested in another man. And it wasn't just an on and off thing. Like, she went to this opera and whatever. So he's acting as if this was very passionate. Like, I got to this point where I couldn't handle it anymore. Never mind the fact that she was married.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. So In his new confession, he said that he confronted her, or Zolia grabbed the knife and demanded he leave when they were in the first floor, or she'd kill him. And that is when he finagled the knife from her and slit her throat. Doesn't make sense, though, because then it's like the majority of the blood was found in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that this all happened in the main level.
Okay.
So physically, the first story made more sense, but it implicated planning.
Mm-hmm.
April 20th of 2022, he was arrested. He was charged with first-degree murder, first-degree criminal tampering, and fourth-degree criminal possession of a weapon. Even with his confession twice, he pleaded not guilty, and he faces up to 25 years to life in prison. The investigation is still kind of going on, and the trial is pending, and we'll have to just like come back for updates because as of right now, they just are trying to gather the information so they can have a trial because it is like 5 months ago.
Right.
Yeah. So, that's a crazy story. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the third guy, they never, like, from what I could find, they never really got into it. So I don't know if it's like genuinely, he just had no deal with anything else during that day. So they didn't like talk about him. And not that I don't agree with extramarital affairs, but you don't get murdered over it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's not a reason to be murdered.
No. So, So I'm excited to hear what happens and if any more weird things come out about it.
That was terrible. Good job.
Thanks.
Have you heard, I have to tell you this quick. Have you heard about the news story about the girl who was found like on a highway and they picked her up and brought her to the police and she had been tied to a bed for 2 weeks and she chewed through her arm restraints, escaped the trailer that she was in.
I haven't read much about it, but I did see a headline about it.
Well, when they went in to find the bodies were that of her mother and brother, and they had been living in that trailer with that her mother's boyfriend, and they had killed her. He had killed her mother and brother, and their bodies were just in the trailer. I mean, still, there's still stuff coming out of it, about it, but and she was tied to a bed for multiple weeks, and she eventually chewed through her arm restraints and escaped.
Wow.
And then do you remember the Turpin story you told?
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, I've seen all those updates.
Yeah, where they were in foster care and foster system.
Like five of the kids. Killed
them. They've been more abused in foster care and just.
Like, I wouldn't say worse, but very different and really bad.
Yeah. So that's
like fun. Sexual abuse and.
Oh, and then some dude went crazy in Dayton and killed four people. It was on the World News Tonight. And it happened on Friday. And on Friday, Nick came over and we forgot to shut the garage door and did not lock the door into the house. So he's on the run. They haven't caught him. And I'm like, cool. He could have come into our house and murdered us all. We need to be more.
Let's be vigilant about security. A little bit more
vigilant about shutting the fucking garage door and locking all the doors.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
So, hey, thanks for listening. Spread the word.
Spread yourselves, kids. We gotta go because Zoom's gonna kick us off again.
These are fucking assholes.
Don't worry. I figured it out. Now I just need to get it all synced up. So next time, it won't be so weird.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Love you.